the people living in the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc who espoused Karl Marx's ideas appeared to want us dead. And when we espoused his ideas, we were called un-American, and our careers were made dead. While addressing people from the West at an embassy on November 18th, 1956, only 1 month before this bombing in Birmingham, at the time that the Montgomery boycott was successfully finishing with all those people who had worn out so many pairs of shoes, First Secretary Nikita Khrushchev, how many of you remember Nikita Khrushchev? He said, whether you like it or not, history is on our side, and then those famous words. Do you know what they are? We will bury you. At that time, these words became proof of the threat of nuclear war. Later, he said he had intended something else, but it was still clear he wasn't friendly towards us. The overwhelming fear of that time inspired some families to dig holes in their back gardens. I imagine some of you knew people, or maybe even your family did, and create bomb shelters, or they had a secret door coming out from their basement into a place where they would be able to hide. And how many of you did drop drills? Woohoo! How much would that have helped, I wonder? And my parents had a 2-year food supply of dehydrated something that we had to periodically eat and was close to inedible. And even my 11-year-old brain was going, but I know you'll give it to people. If there is a disaster, you'll give it to them. This is going to last about a week. Everybody going, ooh. I remember we had this huge sack of hard candies that were all flavors you would never choose. Like, well, you couldn't really tell what they were, but kind of like the watermelon ones. Those are not my favorite. But way back in 1843, that Karl Marx who loomed behind all of this fear we grew up with, he wrote, "Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, just as it is the spirit of spiritless conditions. It is the opiate of the people." What did he mean? What did he mean? Our country is now in the middle of an opioid epidemic. And do you know opioids are just synthetic opiates with the same properties? They might be a little different, but it's pretty much the same thing. But I wonder, what did the word opiate conjure in 1843 when these words were said? Do you know that from the late 1700s, opium played a role in many fashionable cures in the West? Famous doctors recommended it as a kind of universal cure to alleviate pain. And then they discovered the bad news, that it was habit-forming and apathy-inducing. It stunned people, and it kept them from action. In fact, opium was so effective in creating apathy that the British Empire used it as a weapon against the Chinese during the Opium Wars. Google that, it's fascinating. But why did they do that? They did that because China at that time was a more advanced, more powerful nation, and the British Empire wanted to take it over. And by the mid-1800s, the British Empire sponsored opium traffic that resulted in 10 to 12 million Chinese addicts and devastated, especially the large coastal Chinese cities. This is a horrifying story and timely. I wonder about any connections with the current saber rattling. We don't forget our histories. So Karl Marx saw that religion in pre-1843 Europe was dulling people. It was keeping them from doing something about the suffering that he could see that was occurring everywhere around them, mostly to do with that huge disparity between the extremely rich and the poor. Also sounding a little familiar. I thought of Marx's words when I was visiting yet another beautiful church in Europe that had been turned into a museum that was no longer used as a church. I wondered why churches were emptying. The Unitarians in Great Britain are becoming smaller and smaller numbers, as are most of the churches in Europe. How was religion failing to be relevant? Martin Niemöller was a German Lutheran pastor who supported Adolf Hitler's rise to power at first. But when Hitler insisted on the supremacy of the state over religion, Niemöller became disillusioned. He became the leader of a group of German clergymen opposed to Hitler. And in 1937, he was arrested and eventually confined in Sachsenhausen and Dachau. And then he was released by allies in 1945. He wrote these famous words that I think you will remember that are displayed at Holocaust museums. When the Nazis came for the communists, I remained silent. I was not a communist. When they locked up the Social Democrats, I remained silent. I was not a Social Democrat. When they came for the trade unionists, I did not speak out. I was not a trade unionist. When they came for the Jews, I remained silent. I wasn't a Jew. When they came for me, there was no one left to speak out. These words came from a longer speech that he gave, in which he wondered what would have happened if 14,000 Protestant pastors and all Protestant communities in Germany had defended the truth and said, "It is not right." He asks, could 30 to 40 million people have been rescued? His words are a lament for what might have been. But none of that seemed clear in 1933 and 1934. In those years, people were afraid and they were relying on those ways that we humans all rely on to distance ourselves from horrible situations. Many, as he said, were silent. And religion that could have played a role to lead people into breaking that silence was mostly silent too. I believe that religion failed. And I must say that Germany, the country, that in post-war years, they stepped up with incredible restorative justice. Restorative justice from which we could learn a lot. in 1619, 400 years ago, in Jamestown, when the first Africans arrived to be enslaved, Sunday came. People attended church. Religion failed by not gathering people together and saying, "This is wrong." On that Sunday, they could have decided how to free those men and women. And those people could have changed the trajectory of the history of this country. They could have bent with their hands that arc towards justice. Let us sit together again as we did last week in our own lament for that time 400 years ago that was the beginning of great suffering and that could have been different. What could restorative justice look like for our country? And now in 2019, how do we silence ourselves? Do we have methods of self-medication? Do we instinctively reach for that opium pipe? On Wednesday, I ran into Muriel at a moment when I had been reflecting on all that was happening on the border. I was remembering SB 1070 that happened soon after we came to Arizona. I remember wearing the I am illegal button. Did you guys wear that? Anyway, there was the I am illegal button. And now there are even more and sneakier ways that undocumented people are being terrorized. I was thinking about and telling her about the Latina immigration activist in Tucson who is an attorney who told us, we were a group of UU clergy from all over the country, she said, "Don't try to change the laws because new laws are often opportunities to make things worse. And I thought, and it has happened. And Muriel was kindly listening to me, and I was on a roll. And I knew in my heart that this kind of roll was going to send me into a funk. After only a minute more of that roll, I was going to feel in my deepest heart that any change was impossible. Have you ever been on such a roll? Later, it occurred to me, because I was writing this sermon, which is one reason why I love to write these, it occurred to me that expressing all the impossibilities that kind of connect up sometimes in our brains was leading me into a place of inaction, passivity, exactly what the British Empire wanted to do to the Chinese, were leading me into a dead end, just like the workings of an opiate. Have you ever felt yourself getting to that point where a kind of stupor sets in? Perhaps you don't feel it yourself, but you should be looking at the eyes of the person you're talking to. Their eyes might be looking like this, glazing over. You might see reflected in their eyes despair, a word that signifies the absence of hope. Despair. In the reading, Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth describes how he found hope even after a bomb was detonated in his house on Christmas Eve, the house crumbling around him. And he said, the 27th Psalm kept running through my head. The Lord is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear? Through his belief, and I believe also the presence of his children, Reverend Shuttlesworth found a way through fear into hope. But for many of us who don't have that kind of belief to rely on, I'm going to offer for you today a Buddhist alternative. Do you know that one translation of Buddha is the one who is awake? The one who is awake, which is kind of the opposite of for those of you who couldn't see in the back, I was doing a stupefied face. In the face of fear, which I believe is what is coming up in me when I am losing hope, the good medicine I have found is to wake up, be present, find the now. I believe that the bomb that shook Reverend Shuttlesworth's house shook him into the present. It brought that psalm into his mind. It brought the love of the people around him, their safety for now, and fear was dispelled. When I need to be present, if I'm inside, and have a bell nearby, I ring it. Which I did after I apologized to Muriel about my dead-end conversation. I went into my office, sat in my chair, took a deep breath, and rang my bell. And when I'm outside and can't remember, I don't have a bell to ring, I think of a beautiful place. If I'm somewhere beautiful, I look for movement. If there is a tree, I look for the tops of the trees. I look for evidence of wind, for somehow that shakes me into the present. It's a sign that the universe is still moving, even if I'm stupefied. For me, it is a sign of the holy. I take a deep breath. I invite you to take a deep breath and find the present right now. Last week you had these in your order of service, and only three people gave them to me. That's fine. I'm used to that. But one person wrote, "Keep on keeping on." In gathering together here, knowing that many of us are struggling to remain awake during discouraging times, seeing others who are just keeping on, keeping on, can spread hope. If you wake up on Sunday morning and wonder, it doesn't mean anything for me to be here, it does. Your very presence here spreads hope. We have much in this community to celebrate. Muriel and I and others are working on a poster that will show all the ways that Granite Peak has made a difference in the world. A big poster. I am proud of you for keeping the Black Lives Matter sign up even when it was being vandalized, and I'm sure there was fear around that. You are quietly known in the community. The woman who cuts my hair sort of alluded, the one with the sign. And I wonder what we will be called to do in the future as we keep on keeping on. Our voice and presence being right here, they are needed for this work. We need your laughter, your song, your energy. And I want you to learn as I have had to learn because I was so annoying. Learn when the news is handing you an opioid. Refuse to take it. Use that remote control or the delete button. We need to fight this apathy and despair because we need heroes for this time. And we need to be awake for those inklings about what being a hero might look like. Perhaps you have the secret for saving the Dells. You could be that person to bring comprehensive sex education into the schools of Prescott and all the Quad Cities, or increased understanding around gender and sexuality that will save lives from bullying and suicide. Lou was telling me of being in a meeting about climate change, and they were talking about climate change, and the man next to her said, "I'm glad I'm old," he said. Well, we can't give up hope, no matter what our age, because we have those children among us. If you start thinking, well, if the world ends in 2050, I won't be here for it, they will be. I wonder, will you bring a movement that shifts the actions of hundreds, then thousands of people to bring more care to the earth? I am going to do my best at being awake and staying away from despair. And Mary Lou is really good at looking at me that one way. And I wonder, will you join me in a movement to nurture hope? Will you join me?
Yes.
I love your laughter. Well, maybe. No, I mean, you can say, well, maybe. Or you can say, no! But could you say it louder? Will you join me in a movement to nurture hope?
Yes.
Thank you. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Thank you, Molly. And now, please rise.